and welcome to the Awesome Comics Podcast, the place where small press comics make one hell of a big noise. It's episode 170, can you believe it? And I'm Vince Hunt, creator of The Red Mask from Mars, and joining me this week, the creator of the webcomic Vanguard, Dan Butcher.
Hello.
And here he comes, walking down the street, getting the funniest looks from everyone he meets. Hey, hey, it's Tony Esmond.
Hey, I like the monkeys, actually. There was Weren't they sort of vaguely superheroes at some point in it as well? Do you remember in the opening?
Yeah,
sequence?
I do recall that, yeah.
Yeah.
They were all kinds of stuff at the beginning of that show.
I quite like the monkeys. That was quite good, wasn't it?
Yeah. You're a fan of monkeys in general, though, aren't you?
Yeah. Who wrote a lot of the songs for the monkeys? Come on, here's one for you.
Oh, my music knowledge is fucking awful.
Well, Ben White's musical episode, I thought it was a good one to go with. Yeah. Neil Diamond.
Really?
Yeah. Before anyone becomes concerned, this isn't a musical episode. We're going to be talking about music.
No.
Lord, no.
Oh, Jesus Christ, no. No.
No. No. No, we're not going there. Right. No. We're talking about music in comics. We're not... Yeah. No.
Yeah, we're going to talk a bit about that. And
that's
No! And that's because we've got two fantastic guests this week. In an interview that's just about to come up. Now it's everyone will hear us talk about the book Punk's Not Dead, which is coming out this Wednesday, I believe. The collection
is, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. So somehow we managed to blag the writer David M. Barnett and Martin Simmons to talk to us. So that's coming up
with a bit of surprisingly good timing on our behalf, which is very unlikely.
We do have sometimes we have really good timing, don't we?
What?
See?
Yeah.
Couldn't write that, could you?
No.
Probably funny, to be fair, but there you go.
Yeah. Improv.
Yeah.
Improv.
You just never know what to expect on this show.
Mostly shit.
Yeah. But I'll tell you some place where you get nothing but great stuff and no shit.
Class.
And that is on Comic House. Yes, our lovely sponsors, Comic House. Thank you for sponsoring us, sticking with us, and helping us keep the lights on. They are the indie comic marketplace with a difference, and the fact that they're bloody awesome. And there's a huge selection of titles on their database. Lots of people put their books up online for people. All those self-publishers out there, all those indie books. If you want to get your book out to more eyes, then Comic House is definitely a place to go. You can list your book on their website for free, and when you sell a copy, they only take 1 pence commission, which is awesome. And also, they have an app. In this world of apps, one day we'll have an app. God knows what that'd be like. It'd be like Snapchat for... No.
It'd be like that Patrick Stewart movie that he's going to write where he just goes, and then all her clothes fell off.
But it's too late. I've already seen everything.
I love that so much.
But the place where you can also see everything is on Comic House, because they've got so many books on there. But on the app, what have they got at the moment, guys?
The current highlights include Mixtape,
Tony, you're just really impressed at how well this is going, aren't you, Tony?
Oh, that just went so well. That's the smoothest we've ever been.
I know. Miss, you ruined it by laughing.
Miss Fury. That's all right. Don't worry. I'm used to the constant professionalism on this show. we've got Green Hornet. Megatomic, Battle Rabbit, Tinseltown, Black Terror, Surrealsville, and FUBAR, American History Z, which is zombies, if you like those kind of things.
There's quite a few issues with FUBAR, aren't there?
Yeah, there
isn't there. Do you know what FUBAR stands for?
I do indeed.
Beyond All Reason?
I think it's Recognition.
Recognition. There you go. Knowledge is power.
Yeah. I read 32 Kills during the week. The Comic House app. Yeah, really enjoyed it.
It's cracking stuff.
And nice work.
Yeah, and they're also, Comic House also publishing that as well. Mm. So, you know, if you see them at shows or see Andy Clift or Mike Garley, you'll be able to pick up 32 Kills amongst other massively fantastic books that are on Comic House. So if you want to find out more about the app and the great guys in general, then just go to comichouse.com. There's a 14-day free trial, and the subscription's only £3 a month for the app, so there's absolutely
That's
no excuse.
Really. Yeah. You can read hundreds of comics every month.
Yeah, you can. And the rate that they're just adding stuff, it's just value for money is just ridiculous.
I hear that they may be adding quite a few more Dynamite books, is the rumour.
Ah, brilliant.
Oh,
yeah,
nice.
So I'm a big fan of Dynamite, so they're great books as well.
So go to comichouse.com. There you go. There's a sponsorship ad, which Is it the smoothest?
That went really well. Yeah, that's one of our better ones, actually.
Yeah.
Doesn't say much, but yeah, it's one of the better ones.
We overcome some sort of vague professionalism and just went back to the normal, which is good. I like that.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah. Well, we're not really professionals, though, are we?
Well, only in the sex industry.
Yeah, I was going to say. Only in that sense.
Oh dear, but we love comics. That's why we're here every week, and occasionally we go out to different events and shows, and I actually managed get out this weekend to a show, which is
tried to get to that, actually. I'm jealous of you going to that, because I hear really good things about it, that event.
Yes, I went to the Bristol Comic and Zine Fair. We talked about it briefly on the last episode, and I managed to get down there, which took place at the old station in Bristol, which is it's definitely that sort of town where there's a definite arty sort of hub. Lots of
There's only a few towns in the UK could hold that, and I can see Bristol or Brighton or somewhere like that would do well with it, you know.
Yeah. So yeah, and I want to see what it's all about. I don't normally get to see these kind of shows as well. You know, when I've been in conventions, it's a lot more of like the superhero fair, or you know a lot of the great indie stuff that's. It's almost in indie mainstream. Does that make sense? The idea is more mainstream.
Yeah. So
I haven't had a chance to go to, like, I know Tony's been to LCAF every year, but I...
Yeah, we were talking about it earlier. I think there's parallels between the two, aren't there? I think,
Certainly. So, you know, I definitely wanted to check out the Avery Hill table and pick up Follow Me In and Retrograde Orbit. So,
nice.
You know, that was the only thing on my shopping list, as it were.
That's a big old book, Follow Me In, isn't it?
Oh, I really want to get a copy of that.
Yeah.
I haven't got it yet.
Yeah. It's a lovely book as well.
They put out
amazing quality books.
Have you seen Kat's Inktober as well?
So good.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
I was going to say, I'd take my hat off to anyone doing that, because I've only ever done about 2 or 3 days of doing Inktober.
Yep.
So fucking salute to you guys.
Yeah, because I'm seeing it all over social media, and Inktober. You know, I always think fair play. I just probably forget about it, or wouldn't get around to doing it one day.
Well, a page of her Inktober is like a page of this book. It's amazing.
It's amazing stuff. And she may be returning to the show in the near future. Watch this space. So I managed to get down to Bristol Comic and Zine Fair, and it was from 12 till 5. That was the hours.
Okay.
And we must have got there. Me and Joe got there probably about 12:45, 1 o'clock, something like that. And it was heaving. It was
that's
round.
Brilliant.
It was absolutely round. That's so much so that I did think to myself, why did I wear my big coat? Because
it got a bit warm in there.
Well, it was also.
I could just imagine you and Joe arriving. You've got your hooded coat on, you know, your padded coat.
Yeah.
Underneath, you've got your Gruffalo lunch.
I look like Paddington Bear. No. Well, I mean, you know, sod's law that the skies opened and it started chucking it down, which is hardly ideal. But, yeah, the actual event itself, like, so many people there just wandering around, looking at all the art and buying, you know, great books. And there's so many great indie art. I mean, what I liked about it as well is a show that I could go to and I recognised a few faces, but I didn't know most of them. Do you know what I mean? And I love just sort of, you know, discovering new stuff. And I managed to pick up Follow Me In and Retrograde Orbit and catch up with Ricky and Dave from Avery Hill.
Oh, good.
That was always good. Yeah. Dave certainly loves sort of bringing out that sort of card machine. Those signs that are everywhere now that says, "We take card." You know.
Yeah.
That's. I think that's changed the game in terms of conventions, hasn't it?
Yeah.
We got a card machine for the last one, and it's such an easy option. Yeah. You almost have to have it on show though, because people will, search through their pockets for change and think, oh no.
Yeah. And I know certainly there some of the artists I spoke to, they were like, "Have you got any change?" Because I know that they've come up and they've had all their change, and someone's probably bought something like a £2 thing with a £20 note, which has happened to all of us. I managed to pick up some other stuff as well. One of which I will discuss a bit more later.
Oh, okay.
I managed to complete my Todd Oliver collection, which was brilliant.
Oh, nice.
Great. I'm going to guess it's the werewolf book you're going to talk about. Don't tell us. That's my guess.
Do you know what? I might do a quick rundown of a couple of books.
Yeah, do that. Yeah, I like that.
So I managed to pick up the missing books in the Todd Oliver collection and caught up with him, which is brilliant. And thank you for the kind words, Todd. as always, you're far too kind. But yeah, he was doing well. He said afterwards that it, you know, it's one of the busiest shows he's been to. I'm guessing that even though we left, we probably left 2 o'clock, something like that. You know, well, you know, it's more of a sort of passing visit. And you know, these shows, they're super busy. But if, it's not like an MCM sort of thing. It's not like the, you know, or a New York Comic Con. You know, there's a small space. So once you've done it a couple of times,
I had to walk away. You're finding your way around every so often. You can't keep doing that, can you?
Yeah. And also, I had to walk away because I thought I'd just spend too much money. Otherwise,
what was the price to get in, dude?
Free.
Oh, good. Oh, nice one.
Yeah. Free. Yeah.
Oh, nice one.
So I even asked on the door, and they were like, "No, you don't have to pay." I said, "That's, you know, I
think that's fantastic."
Yeah,
I really do. I mean, yeah. I know it's difficult. Yeah. Like, you put on a con, it's got to be paid for, but kind of that idea of this, it's a free venue and people can come in, and you're not paying to get in to buy things from people.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I mean, it's certainly, it was really sort of well sort of laid out, I think, you know, for the space that they had. One thing I did notice, they had like one of those sort of communal tables.
Oh, yeah, we have that LCAV. Yeah.
Which I, you know, it's the first time I've sort of seen it. Yeah. Obviously, they've got a collection of books and, you know, people can pay. There was the Bristol Zine Fair sort of table, I think, where they were taking the money, etc. But that was great. That's the first time I've seen that. I think that's a great idea for indie.
Yeah, it's really good.
Indie stuff. Yeah, definitely.
Shane Chebsey used to do that all the time. That was his deal. I remember him doing it at Bristol for quite a few years. You could drop your books off with him and stuff. Yeah, it's good.
Yeah. But other than that, you know, some great artists. I mean, enamel pins are the flavour of the year this year.
Which is clear because we haven't got any.
Completely.
We'll do it next year when the fad's passed.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fully retro.
Yeah. I mean, I saw some great enamel pins about... you know, and if I was a collector of badges and pins, like I know some of you lovely people are, I might have picked some up. But otherwise, I'd buy them, and they wouldn't go anywhere. Yeah. So but that was one sort of noticeable thing. But yeah, who else did I see there? I managed to pick up another couple of books by Sammy Boras. Quietly Spoken, but putting out fantastic little comics and zines, and plus they're like. Such good value. Like, there's one I picked up called Haunted Skate Park, which is, it's full colour, and it's, you know, it's about 16 pages. There's like a short story and, you know, some sketches and stuff in the back and notes and all kinds, and full colour, like cover to cover, and it was £2.50. Now,
that's good, man.
Yeah. And I just think, you know, and you go somewhere else and you'd see a smaller book. Yeah, it's probably made on thick card and recycled paper, but they're charging like sometimes £8-10. You know, and the pricing can be a bit.
I think let's go there because we've had a talk about this, haven't we? Yeah. So this is a good. I think this is a good time to talk about it, don't you guys? Or
yeah, I agree. Yeah.
Weird. I'm not going to name any names. That'd be wrong. It'd be rude as well. But the I sent you a picture of a book that is basically two bits of paper stapled together.
Yeah.
A comic that is colour, but it's basically two bits of paper. You know, sort of about it's about American comic size.
Yeah.
And it was £6.
That's a lot.
Mm. And that's not down to the shop. I mean, it was in Orbital. It's not down to the shop to charge that amount.
No.
Because having the experience of dropping our comics off in there, that's not how they work. They ask you what you want to sell it for. £6 for two bits of paper. Yeah. We're having a Turkish.
Yeah. Turkish bath for those American listeners.
Very good. Thank you.
We've said this before about the comic and the zine thing.
Yeah.
I mean, one scene is kind of like art and I don't know. Yeah, it's a tricky one.
The Bristol Comic and Zine Fair was definitely more on the zine side than the comic fair. From what I saw, I could, you know, there was amazing stuff there, and certainly inspiring, which is what I love about these little shows.
Well, I'm dipping my foot in the zines as well. I mean, Matt got one coming out.
Yeah, we'll talk about that later.
We're charging £1 for that.
Yeah.
And, I mean, if you look at the amount of work we put into the Awesome Comic, and what we charge and get back, like, we don't really cover the costs as much as, you know, the production costs are sort of helped out a little, but generally we're not making money on that.
Yeah. It's certainly costing me money. I'm employing an artist.
Yeah.
I know. And then you see this and you think, I'm going to say there's various little groups of people who are taking the pee a bit, but I've got to tell you, the arty side of the world, of our sort of little world, I would say are probably more guilty of it than others.
Yeah, I would agree.
There's a few, and it's not the people, the sort of the people who've been about for ages. It's the people who sort of pop up for one comic or two, and then they disappear again. And you think, really? Yeah. Well, the one that I found there, the £6 one, I tried to look it up to see if there's any reviews or anything like that of it, and there was nothing. And it's just somebody who's sort of, I'm going to guess, this is probably idiotic of me, but like an art student who's decided that's what their work's worth, you know. No, it's not. You've got to be competitive. Yeah. It's just going to sit there. It was already dog-eared, you know, from people just picking it up. You can read it. You could have read it. It was only a couple of panels a page.
And definitely, you know, when you pick up and look through these books, I always look at, obviously, you can't really tell the story just by quickly looking at it, but definitely the way everything looks and the art. And, you know, also the interaction with the creator as well. You know, I will, because it's a judgmental sort of medium, isn't it? Especially at shows, you go up and then you're making judgments on it. But I did see a lot of people just sort of almost blind buying, you know, tables around because it was so busy. And I know, John Tucker was talking about, you know, for instance, at Thought Bubble, people were just sort of like, how much for that one? You know, on the corner of the table, I'll just take that, you know.
Yeah, grabbing what?
Really? Okay.
Yeah. So,
because that then really brings it back to cover design.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
And what it looks like on the outside, which is a great way to judge books.
Yeah,
I always do that.
Yeah, but it's certainly interesting, and we know how much work goes into, especially if you're hand making your own comics because it's bespoke and stuff. That's fair enough, but you know sometimes the cost. Like you say, Tony.
Yeah,
like,
I just can't justify.
No, you can't.
If you're just banging it out of a printer, of a digital file, and then stapling it in the middle, and go, here goes £6. So, really? I don't know. It's difficult because if you want to be. Names,
well, I've certainly heard people talk about they've done it on the photocopier at work. And you're thinking, firstly, don't say that because you shouldn't be doing that, you know?
No.
And secondly, well, then it has cost you fuck all.
Yeah,
you don't see it all the time. You don't see it half as much as you used to, but occasionally things do stick out to me, and I think, how much? I mean, I've just that Follow Me In is $18.99, and I guarantee you won't find a better deal than that. You know, but compare that to some of the other books. You know, Marvel are as guilty as anyone. Look at a Marvel trade.
Oh God, yeah, they're really expensive.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if that's something to do with the cost of the import in it. I mean, the taxes and whatever. I think that's certainly added to it.
But
you're right.
But, you know, also art is whatever you want to pay for it. You know,
well,
obviously,
that's the old adage, isn't
we,
it?
And we may grumble about, that's a bit expensive for that. But if someone's going to pay it, it's their prerogative, isn't it? You know.
I think the problem you've got is you've got wankers like Damien Hirst who are making millions out of stuff they don't even make, they employ, you know. Yeah. And you've got people at art school who are being told that constantly and thinking, oh, yeah, well, that looks amazing.
Yeah.
I'll charge £6 for that and it's just a picture of a curlew.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, like prints are more expensive than comics, but in my head, I'm okay with that.
Weird, isn't it?
It's weird. It's
that's
weird.
One panel of a comic, isn't it?
Yeah.
Essentially.
Yeah.
It's certainly interesting, but yeah.
Well, I guess you got to also be competitive with your pricing, like you said, Tony. But if you go too low, you don't want to be seen as like your work has no value by being too cheap.
Yeah.
You know what I mean, it's got to have a good price of what you're buying.
Yeah.
There's a lot more to it than just selling it as well. As if it's your first book, you want it out there. You want being in people's hands as well.
Yeah.
You know,
there's a lot of considerations, definitely.
Yeah. Well, we've seen a lot of posts. I've had a couple of mails this week about the digital offerings on Kickstarter being too high.
Yeah.
I saw another one this afternoon.
Yeah. How much is that going for? Like a PDF of a comic and.
Yeah. And this one was £6 and it was 32 pages, I think.
Oh,
you think, really?
Come
really?
On.
Yeah.
I'm kind of more inclined to go with the Tom Ward approach of like the digital, you just sell for nothing, essentially, and get it out there and get your Kickstarter total up to pay for the physical copies. There you go.
Interesting. I think it's a debate that we will have again at some point.
Yeah, it keeps coming up, doesn't it? Yeah. Every time I go grumpily into a comic shop and pick something up and go, what? And I go over to the counter and wave it at Paul at Orbital and go, what's this all about? And he just sort of makes
it. Then he takes a picture and sends it to us on WhatsApp and we're like, what? And that's the circle of life. That's
I've got a new actually. You'll probably like it.
Oh God.
We've got the Comixology stuff, and it's like a collection of a book that's been out for 30 or 40 years, and they want like 20 quid for it. Yeah. And like, oh, hold on, you fucking sold this about 10 times over. More than that.
Yeah, I know. Over the years.
Yeah. But anyway, back to what I was saying. The Bristol Comic and Zine Fair was a success. I had fun there and bought some stuff. Picked up some new stuff by creators like Izzy Ward, Lindsay McSeveny, I hope I've said that right, and Lucy Ebry, I hope I got that right, which now is also responsible for what may be my favourite T-shirt I have. I even posted a picture of me wearing it.
Yeah, I saw that, yeah.
You did like a sort of catalogue shot, didn't you, earlier?
Yeah, and I look like I just got out of bed in it because I need to iron it. But no,
you don't iron T-shirts, though, do you?
Yeah, I can do.
Really?
Yeah.
Don't do that.
Oh.
Where do you hang... we're not going to get into a fucking laundry discussion.
Hang it up when it's wet and it sorts itself out.
Very strange. Oh, my God, I'm the only person who irons my T-shirt.
No, sometimes I need to. Most of the time I don't, but, you know, it's fine. Bloody hell.
I was reading something about that, like, with this person who, like, what did you do in your life that you thought was completely ordinary but no one else did? And this guy had in their family had a poo knife, and when they did they had a big shit, they had a knife in the family to break it up. And he was round someone's house like when he was in his 20s and said, "Oh, where's your poo knife?" And they were like, "What the fuck are you talking about?"
Oh my God.
And he had one at home and his wife didn't realise that was what it was being used for.
Oh. I know someone who did it with a coat hanger once.
Oh.
I went to school with a kid and he didn't have a toilet door.
Can we?
And his mum had like one of those sort of curtain things that used to blow in the wind a bit. So if you went around his house, you could see his mum doing a poop. He came around to my house and didn't close the door. My mum's like, "What are you doing?"
Yeah. Any of the rooms in the house, that's the one I want a door on.
Like,
one. Yeah. I don't want to see members of my family having a shit or strange. Well, I would say I don't mind taking a look at the strangers having a shit.
I don't mind.
Do you know what? I feel like I find something else out about you, Dan, every week.
Yeah, this alleged friend. Yeah. I'm doing that thing with my fingers now. with a poo knife. Yeah, all right, Dan. I'm coming around your house soon. I'm going to inspect you.
Just slide the smartphone over the top of the cubicle. Make sure you ain't got the flash on.
Oh dear. So anyway, yeah, a great comic event. I might be talking about some of the books a bit later, but and you popped out the Comic Mart as well, didn't you, Tony, on Sunday?
I did a couple of things this weekend. Yeah, I went to John McNaught signing, who did Kingdom that I talked about a couple of weeks ago, and about. What a fucking nice guy. Like, sat with him while he was doing, or stood and chatted to him while he was doing his signing of his books, ready for the launch, the Nobrow launch, and a listener. So, hey, John.
Hello, John.
Thanks for listening, man. Yeah, must get him on at some point. Amazing, just amazing work. Well, look. And then I went
to see
Venom.
Video of like him doing some prints, actually. Like, running.
Oh, he sent me one as well, didn't he? Yeah.
Oh, so good.
Really good. Yeah, I want some of those prints. They look gorgeous, don't they? Yeah. And then me and Dan went and saw Venom, which I'm not going to ruin for anyone, but don't believe everyone they say it's rubbish. I actually quite enjoyed it.
No, yeah, I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
I went in with my expectations low.
Yeah, me too.
I enjoyed it.
Yeah. I think I'm just bored of people saying everything is amazing or everything is terrible. I just quite enjoyed it. You know what I mean?
I haven't seen it.
Yeah.
I was saying the interactions between Eddie and Venom are just fucking brilliant. I would watch a whole film with them two because it's great.
Yeah,
it's
funny as well. I heard that that's good, but there's not enough of those.
Yeah, I wanted more of it.
Mm. Yeah.
Definitely. Yeah.
Anyway,
so I went to the Comic Mart today. So I sort of zipped in and out. So I saw John Bishop very briefly, had a quick chat with him, but bought a few things, filled a few holes. so it was
in his collection.
And
did they have the action figures back?
They did. I had a couple of three or four like big like buckets of them.
Are you joking? Like the one time? Oh, Dan, don't you feel like really? Sad
it's a slap in the face.
It wasn't as busy actually. There weren't as many dealers there because I suppose they only had one a month ago, didn't they?
Yeah.
But if you go as you went in on the left through the main door, which we're going from, there was a couple of people there selling big buckets of figures and stuff. Yeah, that's right.
There you go.
Yeah, so that's good. So, I think that's it.
Yeah, stay tuned because we'll let you know when the next Comic Mart is every time it comes out. And
I can do our little announcement if we've got 2 minutes.
Should we do it in the shout outs? Should we leave them on a cliffhanger?
Yeah. Oh, I've got something to tell you as well, Dan.
Ah, brilliant.
Oh, my word. So much to look forward to when we come back. I say when we come back, we'll still be here because you're still going to listen to us. Yeah. But we might as well put the interview in now. We were very honoured to speak to the creators of Punk's Not Dead. That's all I'm going to say because I'm probably going to do another intro in a minute. So, here's the interview for you. Enjoy. Okay then, as I said just a minute ago, I was going to do a proper intro now, so I might as well do it. And what you people will never hear is how I just fluffed this intro up just a minute ago. So, but this week we're very pleased. Don't interrupt me, Tony. I'm doing well. This week we're very pleased to have with us the writer and artist duo of the hit comic book series Punk's Not Dead, which is a book that we've talked about quite a few times in this show, which is published by Black Crown Comics. Now we are joined by its writer David M. Barnett and artist Martin Simmons. Welcome to the show.
Hello.
Hey guys. Good
you right?
Thanks
finally.
For having us.
We've only been chasing Martin for about 3 years. It's coming. I'm going to say. Yeah.
You always get on, man.
Yeah.
I needed a sidekick to come on. Really.
He's a hard guy to pin down, definitely.
that's a true writer speaking there about their artist. but like we said, Punk's Not Dead was kind of, it was a bolt out of the blue for me personally, for Black Crown when it launched. And this Wednesday, which is October the 10th, if you're listening in the far-flung future, the collected first volume is going to be released. Now we've talked a bit about it. It is this Wednesday, isn't it? On all platforms?
It is, yeah.
Brilliant.
It's this Wednesday in comic shops, and I think it's the 30th in Watchdons and Amazon. And bookshops, that's it. That's the word I'm looking for.
Nice. So, you'd probably get a few sales from our lovely listeners who are probably already reading the series anyway, because we've recommended it. But for those who don't know anything about it, just tell us exactly what Punk's Not Dead is about and how this crazy series actually came to be.
Right. Well, the basic premise of Punk's Not Dead is that there's a 15-year-old kid from the north of England called Fergal Ferguson, but everyone calls him Fergie, and he leads quite an unorthodox lifestyle thanks to his single mum who looks after him, and she kind of like takes him around TV talk shows and trashy magazines peddling kind of like outrageous lies, basically, and that's how they kind of turn a quick buck. And on one of these trips, he happens to be in the toilets at Heathrow Airport, and he meets a ghost who only he can see or hear, and that ghost is called Sid, and he's the ghost or the spirit of a dead punk rocker, and sort of hilarity ensues for a while, but things start to get a bit more serious because Fergie starts to exhibit kind of weird paranormal abilities, and they come to the attention of a department of MI5 called the Department for Extra Usual Affairs, that is basically British X-Files, but like really underfunded and quirky and crap, like you'd expect a British X-Files to be. And they start investigating a bigger picture that involves kind of paranormal happenings connected to music, of which Sid and Fergie are kind of a part of this. And that's where the stories sort of mesh, and it becomes a bigger story than just boy meets ghost, essentially.
Yeah. I get you. Okay. I think you're doing it down a bit there, because is it Dorothy Culpepper? Is that her name? I'm trying to remember.
She runs the department, yeah.
But, I mean, it's a little bit more than the X-Files, because she's kind of like queen of the mods, isn't she? I suppose she's down to having the, you know, she's got the sort of beehive haircut and the mini with the Union Jack on the top type feeling.
Absolutely, yeah. Dorothy's got an interesting backstory that we look at issue 5 of the first arc, which Martin did an absolute tremendous job on.
Yeah.
He changed styles from his usual style and did this kind of sort of like block coloured sort of 60s style, and it really works.
Yeah, I mean that was equally D Cunniff as well. D normally does a flatting for me.
Okay.
We kind of thought, well, because it's obviously set in a different time period, we thought it'd be quite a good opportunity to take on a different style there. So, and D's a sort of successful colorist in his own right anyway. So it was a perfect opportunity really to get him doing that. Which is, that issue has 3 or 4 different art styles in it. So it's quite an eclectic issue actually.
Yeah. How did you come on board, dude? How did you come on board, Martin?
Well, I'd met Shelley, a few years before the project started. I met her Thought Bubble. We had
people who don't know who that is, that's Shelley Bond, who's ex Vertigo and now runs Black Crown with Philip Bond, her husband.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think she was still at Vertigo when she did the portfolio review at Thought Bubble in Leeds.
Okay.
I think either that or she was between those two jobs. I'm not sure, one of the two. But anyway, she was definitely at Vertigo, because I remember I ended up kind of sending her bits and pieces of work after that and staying in touch. But she didn't get in contact with me until, I don't know, it must have been, I think it must have been the end of 2016, early 2017, because she had seen an image I'd posted on Instagram, just like a one-off image. It was originally supposed to be an Iron Man picture, kind of repurposing them. But she saw that and really liked it and got in touch and said, obviously, that she was setting up this new imprint and had something lined up with David, and was I interested.
So I imagine it was pretty super secret at the time, wasn't it?
As I say, we had a long lead in on it, and I think it originally got announced at San Diego 2017. Is that right, Dave? I think it was, wasn't it?
Was it Emerald City? I can't remember.
Oh, no, yeah, it could have been Emerald City. It was one of those two, anyway. You're right. It was Emerald City in Seattle. It got announced there, so we still had a kind of long time before it actually came out, but... it was the third title that came out for Black Crown, so they had Kid Lobotomy first, and then Assassinistas, and then we were the third one. So
I remember seeing images of New York this time last year. Actually, they were showing sort of pages from it. But it's part of why I ask you both you guys, because it's part of a joined universe, isn't it? It's almost like a small area of a town, isn't it? The Black Crown, for people who don't appreciate it, and I know you give. You mention it slightly, don't you, Dave? Because I think the mum works in the pub, doesn't she? I think she says I earn a few quid by working in the pub.
That's right. Yeah, it's the kind of Black Crown vision is that it is kind of a shared universe, but not to the extent of something so continuity ridden as like Marvel or DC or something.
Yeah,
it's most of the books just give a nod to it, really, which we do. I kind of see it as something like. Do you remember Danny the Street from Doom Patrol? This kind of like movable feast of a town sort of thing.
Yeah.
I kind of imagine it's something like that, where wherever you are in the world, you can sort of like take a wrong turn and suddenly find yourself outside the Blackcrown pub. It doesn't necessarily all take place in, like Central City or something like that. It's it's more of a kind of... More of an idea, really, that they're kind of really subtly linked this way, but not in such ways that we have to worry about what happened in Kid Lobotomy or what goes on in Youth and Arts or anything like that.
Because you're very, because it is Preston, isn't it? It starts in Preston, is it? Is that right?
That's right.
I don't understand the North, David, but I understand.
it's kind of like if you went straight up from London and took a bit of a left, you'd be. Roundabout Preston. Yeah, I used to live in Preston. I'm from Wigan originally, and I lived and worked in Preston for a while. And I don't know why, I just wanted to set something in there because, like, part of me thought I had a bit of perverse pleasure in having sort of like Lancashire in a comic book that was going to be predominantly sold in the US and throwing all these weird references into sort of like Preston and Wigan and things like that. And we have this sort of scene where they go to... the site of Wigan Casino, and everyone's kind of like doing Northern Soul dancing, and I thought,
I love it.
so I thought it was quite nice to be able to sort of throw some stuff in like that, and a bit of slang and a couple of references to sort of like northern life, which, you know, I mean, the Americans are sort of very used to sort of like British culture, really through Vertigo and books like, you know, Hellblazer and Alan Moore's work on certain things. So that kind of stuff's gone in through osmosis. But it's also very London-centric, which...
we've got coming up, haven't we?
Which is understandable. But so I wanted to throw some northern stuff in just as just for a bit of a laugh, really. Yeah.
So for people who don't know about the Northern Soul bit, that's there's a riot going on, isn't there, in a Northern Soul venue that everyone sort of, a lot of older people make their way to. That's when you begin to realise that Fergal's powers are playing up, isn't it? Is that right?
Yeah. It's he's kind of like got these sort of psychic powers, basically, that he doesn't really know how to control, and that only sort of manifest in moments of stress. And the first manifests when he's having a schoolyard fight, and he sort of like basically twats this bully without laying a finger on him, and that's kind of the first thing. But then Sid is trying to goad him into sort of like manifesting these powers again, which he does by sort of calling him a like snotty little oik with no friends, and he'll never get a girlfriend. And he does it while he gets him to listen to Anarchy in the UK on his headphones.
Yeah.
So he kind of has this big freak out, and that has these massive sort of repercussions, like in the psychic level across the country, basically. And one of those things is that Wigan Casino, which is like 10-15 miles from Preston, Wigan Casino used to be one of the big Northern Soul venues.
Yeah.
In the 60s, 70s and 80s, and closed down. It's now a shopping centre. But suddenly all these people who used to go there, who are now sort of like pensioners, basically, feel drawn to it again and end up all sort of like dancing through the middle of the night. but for a reason they don't know, they don't understand.
Yeah. So that's what you've done really well. And to be fair, I think that's harking back to Vertigo. That's what Vertigo used to do really well, is they join the sort of urban grittiness of, you know, sort of suburban life almost, but they add the magical to it. You know, you got it in Hellblazer, you got it in the Books of Magic, and you got it, you know, you got it in these sort of books. That's what you've done. You've got a gritty northern town in Preston and Northern Soul and fights in the playground, but you've got people that have these sort of supernatural powers as well, you know.
I mean, for me as a writer and as a reader, that's what works best for me, to have stuff that's grounded in reality almost to the nth degree, and then you throw in this kind of this other thing, whether it's the paranormal or the supernatural or aliens or whatever, you kind of throw that, and having sort of like stark reality mashed up against something really out there is what kind of does it for me as a reader. So that's what I wanted to do.
I think stories like, especially the fantastical stories, they definitely need to have a grounding. Because it just makes the more fantastical stuff.
You have to be relatable to it, don't you?
Yeah. And like those ones where people have, all they concentrate on is the fantastical, and they haven't concentrated on the world, you know, the real life nuts and bolts of things. Like, you don't connect to it, do you? You don't connect to the sort of stories or material.
Absolutely, yeah. And I think there's, I think Martin's artwork sort of like really feeds into that. We've got a scene where sort of like Sid goes to his local corner shop in Preston, and like he's like talking to Sid, and Fergie goes to his corner shop, and Sid's with him, and obviously nobody else can see Sid, and like Sid being the punk he is kind of like shoplifting as he's going along, and because that's just like what he thinks he should be doing, and he's kind of, no one else can see him, but they can see this sort of like tins of beans and toothpaste floating along at sort of like stomach level, where he's shoving it up his t-shirt, and there's just some old lady looking at him, and Martin just captures that sort of like that real kitchen sink normality, and then throws in the supernatural stuff. And I think you've got to have that frame of reference.
Yeah. But what I love about that scene,
with the normality,
What I love about that scene is where the little old lady goes, "Oh, the things they can do these days." Yeah. As if it's like a fucking phone app or something. You know, it makes your shopping float. Yeah,
but it's like with the magpies as well, and like, I mean they're like the weirdest thing you could possibly imagine, really, in this comic, and that's there's all the more contrast with that, with all the normality that's around it as well.
Yeah,
it's kind of, you know, that kind of, it really adds to it,
but,
I think.
But the way that you freak that, you know, the people, well, we talked a bit about this before we started recording, but you, there's a double page spread, which is probably my favourite double page spread in it, which is magpies that are sort of mutate into something slightly different. They become attack dogs almost, don't they, you know?
Yeah. But they can kind of, as I was saying, they can kind of change to, they're like shapeshifters really, essentially, but they kind of don't hold, they can't hold those forms particularly well, so they kind of, there's always something slightly on the wonk about them, if you know what I mean. There's something not quite right, so it makes them really weird. But yeah, they're kind of like, they're just hard to explain. They're very strange creatures, to be honest. But I don't know. I mean, I don't know. As we go through, I mean, they may, the form that you see on that double page spread may or may not be their actual form. We just don't know.
Yeah. So I know. I mean, I've spoken to you, Martin, quite a lot about music online and stuff. So is that something that you two would? I mean, did you two have like a playlist or something? Because it's a book about music, which ain't an easy thing to do, is it? You know.
No, we didn't really, did we? I mean,
I listened to a lot of stuff while I was writing. I mean, maybe we should put a playlist together. Of sort of like inspirational stuff.
Yeah, I think Shelley asked me. I put together a playlist for one of the quarterlies actually, but for the life of me, I can't remember what's on it, so I couldn't tell you. Yeah, we should do, really, shouldn't we? I mean, I think that's quite good. I mean, same as David, I listen to a lot of music when I'm working, but it's not all punk music. But then again, you know, the book's not just about punk. You know, that's kind of, it's about all different sorts of music, but there's all sorts of different pop culture references in it, really.
Yeah, there's a bit of prog in there. We know there is.
Oh, yeah. Got to be a bit of prog.
What sort of thing influenced you, Dave? What sort of thing were you listening to while you were writing it?
Oh, I absolutely loads of stuff. I've got like such sort of broad taste at the moment, and I am guilty of sort of like picking on like a genre or a movement and just sort of like mainlining it for a couple of days. I mean, certainly when I was doing the Wigan Casino stuff, I was kind of really focused on listening to sort of 60s girl bands. So like the Supremes and stuff like that, and Martha and the Vandellas. So I had that on sort of like repeat all the time. And funnily enough, one of the things I haven't listened to much while I've been doing this is punk stuff, really. And it's kind of like, although it's called Punk's Not Dead and it's got Sid in it, and it's like those are the obvious kind of signifiers. I didn't want us to just put a book out that was kind of like,
is it too
just,
obvious?
Just
maybe?
About yeah. punk and just obvious, really, because it's and there are a few people who were kind of like commenting on social media when the book was announced, saying, "Oh God, it's like, you know, what we need just a book celebrating a punk that, you know, was over 40 years ago, and Sid Vicious, who wasn't necessarily a great person
or a great musician."
Exactly. but hopefully, like, when they read the book, they realize it isn't about that at all, and it's kind of as the book goes on, certainly as we get into arc two, we find out it's more about sort of like generational clashes, really.
From the outset, I mean, like, Fergie, obviously he's describing Sid to a generation that has no idea who Sid is, because he's like almost the narration, isn't it? And it's there's a nice sort of bookend to it that I love, to the first volume. It sort of ends similar to, and I just love that, because for a lot of people, Sid Vicious is, you know, it's just a cool name to a lot of people. A lot of people just don't, because time has passed. You know,
absolutely, yeah.
I mean, Sid and Nancy, the movie's like what, 30 odd years ago? Yeah. You know, it's like
bloody hell.
There's not been that much about them, has there, really?
No.
Yeah.
No. Absolutely. Yeah, you're right.
But it's like when Sid mentions John Lydon, didn't he? And Fergie says, "Oh, isn't he the bloke that sells butter on telly?"
Yes. I'm so glad you said that, because that's all I do. Yeah. That stupid suit and him selling butter. Yeah. And I paid to see them at Brixton around that time, and they were fucking awful. And all I could think of is, "Oh, go back to your butter adverts." Yeah.
I tell you what, I gave a copy of Punk's Not Dead 1 to John Lydon last month.
Oh, did you? Oh, okay.
Yeah, he wasn't happy.
How did that come about, Dave?
He was playing at a music festival near me in West, where I live in West Yorkshire now, and Public Image were on, and I had press passes. I was kind of like, I had backstage passes, and I'd decided I was going to go and try to get a copy of Punk's Not Dead into Lydon's hand. Yeah. Initially, with the thought, I had this thought in my head of like him holding it and getting a picture of him, and then I rapidly realised that wasn't going to happen. So I basically crashed into his dressing room with his security sort of like 2 feet behind me, and managed to press a copy of the comic into his hands before I got chucked out.
Do you think he would have reacted better if it was a tub of Lurpak or something?
He's never been great with journalists, Dave. It's all right.
No. He's he was just going, oh, fuck it, hell. And I was thinking,
that's his go-to phrase, though, isn't it? That's
I wouldn't mind if he'd have flicked through it and said something like, oh, I can't believe it's not better, or something like that. Which would have been great, because I was just like, just give us a bit of publicity. Just rip it up and eat it, John. Come on.
Just let me take a picture. Yeah.
But yeah, so yeah, he got a copy anyway.
So interestingly, like, I mean, Martin, you were brought on by Shelley, you know, and got in touch with David, but so obviously you hadn't worked together until then. But how was this process? Because there's, as you can tell from what we've spoken about so far, there's a world to this book. There's, you know, the way things work and don't work. You know, the supernatural, the real world, etc. And this only works if the two creators are playing on the same level and you know exactly, you know, the beats of everything. So how did you find when you first like sort of spoke to David and stuff, how was that to begin with before you knew I'm really going to enjoy doing this?
I mean, to be honest with you, I mean, we had a conference call anyway, and kind of we hit it off straight away, to be honest, me and David. I mean, we're similar ages and kind of have a similar musical taste and things like that, similar upbringing, so we kind of hit it off straight away. But I mean, the script for the first issue was fully formed anyway when I saw it. Like, it had already gone through, like, him and Shelley had worked, you know, thoroughly on it together, so it's kind of fully formed. But I mean, the first things I worked on were just character designs for it. And I don't know. David, did anyone else do any character designs in the end? I'm not sure. But I know you kind of thought I kind of hit the nail on the head with Fergie and Sid.
Not as far as I know. I think when I'd been working on the first script, and Shiller said, I'm going to get two or three artists to do some character designs and see what you think. And yours were the first ones that came back. And I said, don't bother asking anyone else. He's nailed it. So,
I mean, it kind of it's been pretty smooth running, to be honest, hasn't it? Really, as far as kind of, you know, that coming together. I mean, we took a long time over the first issue and everything working on it, but it kind of it's been pretty smooth running, I'd say. I mean, it's not been an uphill battle, has it? Really, between us, we've kind of seems to be on the same wavelength with it.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, me and Martin have we have a chat about once a week about stuff, and I'll sort of like the first couple of issues, the first arc was sort of like really I kind of underwrote in terms of what Martin was capable of doing. So I'd write my scripts, and then I'd see the work he'd done on sort of like the first issue or the second issue as those pages were coming in, and I was thinking like, fucking hell, this guy can do anything. So I'd go back and rewrite those scripts to
add horses is always a good thing he likes you to do.
Fucking horses,
like crowds and horses, I believe is
I mean to be honest, I mean I can't speak for David, but I mean, like, Shelley, she's an amazing editor. She really pushed like my artwork completely. I mean, the first set of thumbnails that I sent back, kind of we reworked them, and so it completely changed. So in that respect, it's a completely organic thing. I mean, it's changed even the layouts from the original script have changed, and the amount of panels and so forth. So it was organic, but it was kind of, it was still kind of smooth going. It wasn't any problem. But Shelley really kind of, she pushes you to do that extra 10% basically.
Nice.
So it kind of, you know, that helped massively, to be honest.
I mean, we talked about this. This is so in her wheelhouse as well, isn't it? I know she's a big fan of British music and everything. You know? This is so up her street, isn't it?
Yeah, very much so. Yeah,
absolutely.
I would say, I mean, I don't know what she would say this, but she's more than an editor. I mean, she's contributed so much to this project.
Right. Really,
okay.
You know.
Yeah.
She's part of the creative team, basically, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. Same here. Yeah.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, that's cool.
It's interesting from because this is my first comics work, so I've never been edited before, so I've never I've nothing to sort of like compare it against.
Yeah.
But she's brilliant in that she'll take my script and she'll look at it and she'll say, this is 90% great. This scene here or these two scenes here, you could do better than that, couldn't you? And initially you're going, oh, hell no, actually I couldn't. I'm just like sweating blood on this. And then you kind of like think about it for a couple of days and think, yeah, and okay, I'll try this. And every time it works out better. Yeah. And she just, like Martin says, she just like pushes you on a bit. And you get the feeling that perhaps other editors would say, on your first or second draft, yeah, that's great, let's go with it. But Shelley just says, let's just make this just a little bit more perfect, and you kind of think about it, and it always works every time.
Well, we talked to John Freeman years ago when he came on and talked about being an editor, and it's an eye to the detail as well, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, they've really got to get into it and get into the roots of it, you know?
Mm. Absolutely. I mean, there's a scene in the first issue, and it's right at the end where Fergie has his fight with the bully, Martin had drawn this sort of crowd scene of like school kids who were sort of like walking away from the fight, and there was just one girl in the crowd, and Shelley just picked up on Martin's artwork and said to me, "Who's this girl?" And I was like, "I have absolutely no idea. Martin's just drawn a crowd of kids." And she was saying, "This girl looks really interesting. I think we should use her." And I'm sort of like, "Yeah, but she's not part of my story." So I had to go away and think about it. And she became Natalie, who's a massive part of the story and
well, is
a huge part of Arc 2 as well.
Oh, okay.
I really like her as a character, and the way you flesh her out, because you don't flesh her out till, is it, I'm going to say issue 4 or 5, where you meet her father.
Yeah, it's quite that's right.
Isn't it? And you suddenly get a sense of her, why she's such a bitch to everyone. Really nicely done,
So, David, obviously, as you said there, this is your first comic work, because you're a novelist, aren't you?
That's right, yeah. I'm primarily used to writing prose fiction, definitely, yeah.
So how did you get into the comics game?
How did I get into it? It was similar to Martin, really. I went to the Thought Bubble Festival in Leeds, which is not too far from where I live, back when it was in November, so that would have been 2016. And
yeah, the old venue that would have been, was it?
Down at the Royal Armouries, near the river. And I was just, I was there with my son and we were walking around. And I initially went over to see Philip Bond because I used to be a big fan of Deadline and everything like everything he used to do. Liz and Pippa, Wired World and everything. So I was like, oh my God, Philip Bond. And then I realised Shelley was at the side of him. So I was like, all right. So I had a chat with Shelley and I was like, basically just a chat saying, oh God, yeah. I was like literally brought up on Vertigo Comics. Everything was like so important to me when I was like late teens, early 20s. And we had a good chat. And about a week later, I kind of, I sent her a message on Twitter and I said, look, we had a chat last week. She said, I don't know if you remember. She said, oh yeah, I remember, yeah. I said, I want to get into comics and I just wanted to know what you think the best thing is. Do I find an artist and self-publish? I just have no idea how to do it. And she was like, oh God, you're so British. Why didn't you say this to me like last week? And I was like, well, I didn't like to mention it. You know, I'm sure like, you know, every man and his fucking dog comes up to you and says, I want to write a comic and stuff. And so she said, well, what's your idea? So I sent her the elevator pitch for what would become Punk's Not Dead. And she was like, oh, okay, that sounds interesting. As you say, it was like, ticked a lot of Shelley Bond's boxes with the music and stuff like that and the British stuff. So she said, have you written anything? I said, well, I've kind of roughed a bit of stuff out. She said, send me a 2-page scene from your idea. So I did that, like, sent that a week later. And then she said, okay, could you write a 20-page script? So I did that. And so like a couple of weeks after that, she said, right, it's top secret, but I'm taking this job with IDW. with curating a creator-owned imprint called Black Crown, and I'd like this to be one of the launch books.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, wow, is that easy to get into comics?
Now, I'm sorry, this might be a mistake, Dave, but were you part of, did you write an article on comic conventions?
Yeah, I did. I do a lot of stuff on comics for The Guardian and The Independent and stuff like that. And,
right.
I think I wrote a piece for The Guardian last year, a year before. Is that the one you're thinking about?
Yeah, it was right in our wheelhouse. It was like, why are there not more comics there? You know, yeah. It was like that sort of thing. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I think it was a piece saying, like, these days there are so many cons that call themselves comic conventions, and you basically have nobody apart from somebody who once sort of like delivered the Beano on his paper end 20 years ago as the only comics person. And it's always people who played like third Cyberman in 1963 or something like that. So.
Which is when you became our favourite guest.
Yeah. I remember that article because we shared that about.
We did. Yeah, we talked about it quite a lot. See? Yeah. Well done, sir.
By the way. Yeah, nice one.
Yeah.
See, we already knew we liked you, even then.
Yeah, exactly. So
now that you're like in comics, and I mean your first experience is working with a great artist like Martin.
Absolutely.
What do you want to? Is it just Punk's Not Dead for the foreseeable future, or do you have any other sort of mini projects that you're bubbling away, or is it just the novels?
Well, it's I'm writing a novel at the moment that I've got to deliver in about 8 weeks, so I'm a bit headed down on that, which is another music related piece actually. It's kind of my priority really is Punk's Not Dead and getting at least 3 or 4 arcs out of that, which I would love.
Did you hear that, Martin?
Yeah, you're ready, Martin.
Martin's well up for it.
I've heard that.
But I have got another project that I'm on with that I honestly can't say anything about at all, but it's like dead cool. It's really
more
cool.
Comics. That's always good.
You're right, Doctor Who. Come on. It's
definitely a comic, and it's not a licensed thing. So I think there's something going to come out in a couple of months from that.
Is it Doctor Screw? Because that'd make a great comic.
Yeah. Who's been talking? But the best thing really is yesterday when they announced at New York the second arc of Punk's Not Dead, which me and Martin have been sitting on for like a good couple of months now. And we were at Thought Bubble, and I'd had a couple of beers, and Martin said, Shelley told me not to let you tell anyone. And then I was basically telling complete strangers who were walking past, don't tell anyone, but it's going to be announced at New York.
He wasn't doing that. But without giving away too much of the first arc, there is a chance that you'll be heading down to London for the second one. I know we talked about this before we came on air, but is it? So are you looking forward to that, Martin? Because, I mean, no. You're a southerner, aren't you?
Too many landmarks.
Yeah.
Big Ben, riot police, crowd, orchids, where else? Westminster Abbey, I don't know.
Oh, God, yeah. I mean, taking that into context, have you ever had an experience where someone's come to you and says, I live in that town, that's not like that? Have you ever had that?
Who, you asking me?
Yeah, you.
You draw the stuff, man.
Yeah.
But I've never been to Preston, I've never been to Wigan.
Have you still never been there?
No, never been.
There you go.
I tell you what, though, he did a cracking job on the on the Preston, because I was trying to describe these sort of terraced houses that people would live in, like Fergie lives in, and I thought, later down the line I'll give Martin some photo references, but he absolutely nailed it. Bob on.
Well, the internet's a wonderful thing, isn't it? There's plenty of references.
You can search for anything on there, I've heard.
Apparently.
Oh, yeah. God.
Don't want to confirm your search history.
Yeah, you don't want Preston and Wigan showing up in your search history.
That's almighty. Yeah.
Hey, where's the pie balm from? Is that Wigan?
That's Wigan, definitely. Yeah. Staple diet.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you've moved over to the other side of the Pennines, haven't you now, Dave? You're Yorkshire now, aren't you, mate?
Yeah, I'm doing missionary work over here and it's going quite well. So.
Have you two actually finally sort of met in person, though?
Oh, yeah, several times.
Oh, yeah, good.
Yeah, we arranged a meeting not long after it. We sort of like started going. I think we had a pint in King's Cross. I think that King's Cross Station. That was like as glamorous as it got.
That, like, that was like your first date.
Yeah, it was like, I'll be wearing the red rose.
We're stood by platform 9, whatever it is, 3/4. And
oh, the pub upstairs. I've been in there. It's like a Witherspoons pub, isn't it?
That's right. Yeah. But I wanted to be with a lot of people while it was my first time meeting him and stuff like that.
That's fair enough.
He is a bit handsy, I've got to be honest with you.
Yeah, like an octopus. Yeah, but we've done a couple of cons together now. We did Portsmouth back in May, didn't we? And
yeah.
And then we went to Leeds as well. So, yeah, we can stand each other's company, can't we?
Yeah, we only do the glam ones.
Yeah.
How was Portsmouth? We've heard good things about it.
Yeah. It was excellent. Yeah, really good. Yeah, really, really good. Yeah, I mean, it was busy. I mean, it was a really, really hot weekend as well. So you kind of figure it's going to be quieter when the weather's so good, I suppose. But it was really well attended. You get some really good guests as well. And
They
had a good lineup. What time of year was that again? Was that?
It's the May bank holiday, the first one.
Yeah. It takes a bloody long time to get through to from the north. I can tell you that.
Bloody hell! Yeah,
it took me a long time from Reading actually, because I was stuck behind Team Sky on the way down the country roads. Along.
Well, you should have gone in the car, Martin.
No, it's good. It's a good con, actually. It was good.
Cool.
So, obviously, Punk's Not Dead Volume 2 is going to be out in February. And is that going to be another 6-issue arc?
Is it 5?
I think it's 5. Yeah, 5.
I should know that, definitely, before I finish writing it, because that could be a bit embarrassing if I write 6 and it's actually 5. So I'd better check. Yeah, I think it's 5.
Check how many you've been paid for.
So are you going to do any sort of shows next year to sort of coincide with that, to keep the PR tour sort of going? Do you know yet?
Well, we're definitely at Portsmouth, aren't we?
So yeah,
we're
Portsmouth again.
Portsmouth.
Yeah.
I don't know. Hopefully an American one. We have to see.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah, that'd be really nice. I mean, it's coming out in February, so if it's sort of 5, February, March, April, May, June, so it takes us into summer. And if the trade comes out about the same time, October, it'd be nice to do something like, San Diego or New York or something.
Yeah.
How are you finding being on the other side of the table, David?
In terms of
being at a convention, yeah.
Well, it's the first time I've actually tabled was at Leeds 2 weeks ago. I've never tabled before, and I found it really interesting. Yeah,
you did a very brief stint, didn't you, at Portsmouth, but not for very long.
I was just kind of going to Starbucks for you, really, wasn't I?
Yeah.
what did you think of it, Dave? Sitting there, was it a strange experience or?
No, I really enjoyed it. Actually, I've kind of done similar stuff with from the book side of things, but I just find comics people much more friendly and willing to chat and stuff like that, I really enjoyed it.
You had your son Charlie with you as well, didn't you? So selling,
yeah,
selling,
that's right, kids. He
outsold us on the first morning, didn't he?
Yeah, he'd done some prints of Spider-Man Adventure Time and stuff, some artwork, and I got it printed up for him, and he was like, he was selling like hotcakes, and people were ignoring us, so it's like,
he's not coming back on Sunday. He's not allowed back.
Yeah, this is the last time you do this.
Awesome stuff. So obviously, Punk's Not Dead is there's a bit of music going on in there. And Tony, you came up with a question the other day, didn't you?
Yeah, we were having a chat about this because it's a weird one. We don't often talk about music because it's something that is never done well in comics. There's a few occasions, aren't there? You think of sort of Mary Jane dancing around the front room in Spider-Man, or the Archies versus the Ramones, whatever that episode was. You know, there's a few things that are done well.
Yeah.
So we thought we'd have a chat about it. Firstly, I mean, I don't know, ask everyone really. Do you listen to music whilst reading comics? What's the thoughts?
I can, but I prefer not to.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
I think if I am, then I'm not listening to anything with lyrics.
Yeah.
Right. Point. Okay.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that's more from you from a sort of drawing point of view.
Same sort of thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of creators work, they have film scores going on, don't they? And things where they're. I
think
quite a good idea, really.
I think if
I'm reading, I kind of, and I've got music on, I kind of like end up blocking the music out. I think I can only sort of focus on one thing, one sort of like piece of stimulus at a time. So if it's on in the background, I don't really listen to it if I'm reading or doing something else. If I'm writing, I don't really do film scores. I think they're a bit crap, really. Apologies to anyone.
Pitch Perfect 3. That's a great soundtrack.
Yeah.
My favourite, apart from music, my favourite thing to have as an accompaniment while I'm working is so unpunk you wouldn't believe it. It's either snooker or tennis.
I do better with the TV on, with the sound turned down, actually. And, right. It's I always put something like have you got that channel Talking Pictures, which is on Sky and stuff, which is just like old films from the 30s and 40s public information films. It's brilliant. It's just like wallpaper in the background. So when I'm writing, I kind of just do one sort of like activity at a time. I'm a bit sort of like single track mind like that. So if I'm reading a comic, I probably wouldn't listen to what's on in the background. So
yeah, you almost zone it out a bit, don't you? Yeah, yeah. So the question I was going to say, because it's something we don't talk about much, is if you have to match a song up with a comic, what do you match up? So I put it out to you guys early, didn't I? So what? Shall I go first for mine?
Go on, you go first. Yeah.
So mine's by the lead singer. He eventually left this group before this song came out, but he was from the lead singer of a band that were named after a panel in a Dead comic. Can anyone guess this one?
Lead singer of a band named after, was it Teardrop Explodes?
Yes, very good.
Yes.
For you.
That's
So the Teardrop Explodes is actually a narration in I think it's something someone says in a panel of a Daredevil comic. And I would listen to World Shut Your Mouth, which is by Julian Cope. And I would read...
Good song, yeah.
Yeah, brilliant song. Mm-hmm. And I would read the recent Black Bolt trade.
Ah, nice.
Because it's also got a bit of a double meaning in it. Because he doesn't... Yeah. He can speak in that one, although he can't normally. Sometimes he can, sometimes he can't. But also, I kind of wish the world would fucking shut up at the moment. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's got a little bit of a double meaning. So that's where I went with that one. What about you, Gon? You go next, Dave. Gon, you're next up.
I think I always think there's a kind of thematic link between Love and Rockets and the Pixies. I don't know why. I think it's just kind of like that sort of LA, sort of like slightly Mexican, especially the early Pixies stuff. Like we're talking like Come On Pilgrim or Surfer Rosa. So something from that, or maybe even Crackety Jones or something from Doolittle. While I was reading Death of Speedy by Jaime Hernandez, I just think that I always think that, you know, the band that's always in the Mechanics stuff, Ape Sex. I always think they must, even though they're a punk band, I always think they must sound a bit like the Pixies, early Pixies. So
didn't Frank Black do a comic with Stephen Appleby? I think he did, didn't he?
Oh, he did a comic a couple of years ago, didn't he?
But, nice, good choice. Yeah, and obviously that there's the famous image of the band playing on the stage, isn't there, with Love and Rockets as well. Yeah,
absolutely. Which we had one of our variant covers kind of touched on that a bit, didn't it? Martin, was that Dilraj Mann's?
Love Dilraj. It's brilliant. I saw him at Thought Bubble. Yeah, did you manage to meet him at Thought Bubble or?
No, I didn't see. Did you see Martin?
Yeah, I met him. Yes, lovely chap.
Top bloke. Yeah, really nice guy. Yeah.
He did a variant which was sort of like Sid, sort of like and Fergie with guitars, and when it was all like washed in red, it was really nice.
Oh, nice. I might get over that. Yeah. Oh, cool. Okay, Martin, you next.
I thought I'd read Hellblazer because that's kind of like the comic I kind of grew up on. Really, that's kind of probably the biggest influence on me. It's mainly the covers, the McKean covers, but Not well. First of all, I went kind of obvious. Got something like Highway to Hell, which is pretty obvious, really. But
right, I get you. It's hard not to go with on the nose when you're doing this. I was reading through and thinking,
Then I thought, nah, something like a Robert Johnson sort of, blues, Hellhound on My Trail or something like that, which is kind of, sort of based in witchcraft and so forth. Anyway, so I thought that was quite fitting. Thing is, something like that Violent Cases, which is kind of another big influence, again, is Dave McKean. Not so much a specific song, but I mean, that's something I would sit down and read with music, and it'd be some sort of smoky, sort of low-key jazz thing, I think, and I think that would work really well.
Yeah,
okay.
Nice.
See, I always think of Violent Cases as having kind of like, organ music they used to put on silent films in cinemas. I don't know why, but I always think of that. And I always think Constantine is like dead punky as well, because he used to be in a punk band, didn't he? Was it Mucus Membrane or something?
We could go The Walking Dead, You Need Hands by Max Bygraves.
Classic. Yeah.
Or anything by the Wurzels.
With really low key minimalist jazz. Imagine like a smoky bar type thing. I think that fit that quite well.
Good one. Guys, what about you, V?
Off the top of my head, obviously I talked about the book Realm of the Damned by Werewolf Press that I absolutely love. And that is proper like metal as fuck. Right. Reading that. I think they might actually have. A couple of the band members might be in a couple of the panels. If you listen to anything by the band Behemoth, that is proper dark black metal. Yeah. That is just the soundscape of the book, which is pretty intense. If I was going to go probably to the more mainstream, I would probably choose, the God Butcher, God Bomb, Thor run by Ribic and...
Aaron.
I would say you got to go prog metal for something like that. Probably someone like Dream Theater or Opeth or Tool. Tool, that might be quite good. For reading that. Something that, where you're going to have like an 8-minute like guitar solo. Because it's just I think with those sort of like epic, fantastical, I mean, anything with Thor is probably fairly epic and sort of universe sort of spanning, isn't it? You need something that's going to push your brain to that kind of length, and I think that the sort of prog world where they have like where they take like 10 minutes for a keyboard solo is where you want to be.
I mean, some have thought you could go a bit Wagner, couldn't you? Because it's almost literal, isn't it? And stuff,
Surely Zeppelin with Thor as well, is that really obvious?
Cliche, Martin. Oh, that's so 2017.
Dan, what about you, mate?
Recently I read the Robert Carey, The Cruel Sunset comic that he's been putting out for free.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And okay. I'm very much sort of into the synthwave stuff at the moment. Oh. And one that's really good is a band called Laserhawk, and they've done an album called Skullshark.
So good.
And it was just great. It went with the comic so well.
Yeah.
I've also been going back through a bit of Drugs and Wires and just having the synthwave on all the time. It's just fantastic. Yeah. Really kind of, I'm not too big with kind of, like you guys said, reading comics and listening to music. It's kind of, it's either one or the other.
Yeah.
Bit, maybe. Occasionally I'll do it. Just, I don't know. Sometimes, depending what mood you're in, it kind of improves the action sometimes.
Yeah. Like, yeah, I'd agree.
But if you have completely the wrong song, you've got to be like, no, I need to switch this off because this just isn't right. You don't want to be reading Swamp Thing and listening to Baby Got Back, do you really?
No. What's that?
I'm not going to sing it. Don't make me sing it.
He loves singing. He loves to do a bit of singing. Can I add a couple? I'm going to say a couple more. Yeah. When the Revolution Comes by The Last Poets, I'd read Transmetropolitan. I would also do Search and Destroy by The Stooges. I'd do Strontium Dog. I know it's a little bit on the nose, but
that's fine.
Fear is Man's Best Friend by John Cale. I'd do Daredevil.
Yeah,
got a little bit.
I mean, at the end of the day, we know every comic. The perfect soundtrack to every comic is Vanilla Ice, Ice Baby.
Yeah,
and that just works across the board. Especially
anything by Sade. I read all my comics.
Yeah, From Hell is really good with that.
Yeah.
From Hell is definitely Saturday Night by Wigfield.
But a lot of people do Spotify lists. We've done one for Cockney Kung Fu, which we sort of had. I've done one for Coffee House Barbarians. You know, yeah. And just for the two of us, really. So if I know she's drawing it or Nick's drawing it, then I'll put something in for that issue that, you know, is going to sort of get the idea across. I think it's a really cool idea. I really like it.
Yeah.
Like Mike Garley, I mean, for example, with his Kickstarters and things, he does tracks as well, doesn't he?
Yeah.
He soundtracks that's part of the... Which is quite a cool idea, I think, really.
Mm. Listening to one this week. Yeah, with his new one. Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
You did one for Murder Road, didn't you, Vince? Was that right?
I've got a little bit. Have I posted it? I'm not sure if I posted it.
Unless you have.
Yeah. But I know I definitely made one whilst creating it. I've got, like, you know, that I just add, like, new when I hear a new song. Because I love discovering new music. So it's I love, like, things like Spotify, which I listen to now. You've got your track list, and then, like, oh, if you like this, check this out. And I love that, just discovering new songs. And if they're good, they get added to the playlist, which is just good.
I got a free Spotify thing with my phone contract, and I'm a convert to it. I just because I spend all the only time I listen to music is when I'm on the train or on the commute.
Yeah,
it's so perfect for me to be able to download and do little mixtapes and whatnot. You know, it's great stuff. Yeah.
Oh, the mixtape. God bless the mixtape.
The enamel badge is taken over from the mixtape. We've heard this.
Yeah. So obviously you guys have got. I mean. Both of you have a massively bright future. I mean,
that's nice of you to say so.
Yeah. We're big fans of this series. Oh, I mean, David, for us, like, you've come out of the blue.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, Martin's old hat, we know where he's been.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
He's all over Marvel covers. He's all over it.
Yeah.
I bet.
Yeah. And whenever we see Martin at a show, we're just fluffing him all the time.
Maybe I go to him, to be honest.
I mean, I will say, dude, like, you are, I mean, your cover work is absolutely smashing it.
Mate, the Jessica Jones cover is one of my favourite covers of it's fucking amazing.
A lot of fun to do.
Yeah.
I think the Quicksilver ones are a lot of fun. So that the first one, that was a real challenge. There's a lot of work went into that.
They're ace. Really good.
Thank you.
And that, like, was it a Jessica Jones one that had Doctor Strange on it?
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah. So far, who's been your favourite character to draw when you've had a chance to do those covers?
On the Jessica Jones one, I think it's issue 5, I think it is. Spider Man's on there, so that's kind of like a.
Can you talk about your new projects at all, Martin? Or.
Well, as I say, we've got Punks Are Dead now, so that's kind of the major thing for me at the moment. I've done a just 10 pages on a whole comic recently.
Mate, nice.
Yeah.
Good. Yeah.
I think that's December.
But also, it feeds itself, doesn't it? I mean, because obviously Punks Not Dead, you're, like, your baby... David, your parents, you know. But then you go do these covers for Marvel. You know, people see it and just go, "Jesus Christ, who's this guy?" And then it feeds back into Punk's Not Dead. So it's just
I mean, I can't turn down doing covers for Marvel. That's kind of like a dream thing as well. Mm. I mean, it does work out quite well doing Punk's Not Dead and doing the covers. I can kind of fit covers in around it, so it's
I mean, that's the thinking now. You've always got to have your indie project as well as your big two projects, haven't you? That's the kind of the world now, isn't it, almost, you know?
Yeah. If it was up to me, I'd have Martin out, like, working every night on the street. doing Marvel and DC covers, so long as it fed people back to Punk's Not Dead. So.
Holding them up with an arrow pointing. I mean,
just as a gorilla or something.
Mate, I reviewed the first issue of this, and I've loved it ever since, mate. I bought it 3 times now.
It's hard to sell, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think it was all 7 actually. So.
So we really cannot wait for volume 2. That's going to be cracking in the new year.
I tell you, I've seen Martin's work on the first issue, and he's really sort of like stepped up a gear, and which I didn't think was possible because I was like so impressed with his work on the first arc. But I think the first arc was certainly for me finding my feet in sort of like writing scripts and stuff. Yeah. And then with the second arc, I've got more confident with knowing what Martin's capable of. So I'm sort of like throwing sort of like bigger set pieces into the mix and stuff. So
I think that's right. I mean, I think if you look back at the first script from the first start, kind of there was no double page spreads or anything like that in there, was there? And kind of it took us a while to kind of get that rhythm going between us, I suppose, with those sort of things. But now you're kind of throwing in a lot of those things there, which is really good. So I think the scripts everything's been ramped up, hasn't it? I think Rishi for volume two, I think it's all kind of stepped up.
Nice.
Good. Absolutely, yeah. I mean, I think it's like Shelley Bond said to me, so like right at the beginning when I was starting off, you're not making a movie. There's no budget here. Just like go as big and as sort of outrageous as you can, and Martin will be able to do it.
Yeah, nice. Awesome. Yeah, well, she's, having spoken to her, she certainly thinks the world of you two. I spoke to her at signing at Orbital, and she was going on about how special it is. That was prior to it coming out, you know. So I'm sure she's full on behind you, isn't she? You know.
Oh, she's great. Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. As I say, she's part of the creative team, essentially.
Yeah.
So obviously, the first volume is out, and that this Wednesday, probably when or now. So, you know, check your local comic book store or like Comixology or whatever and get your hands on it. Where can people... Guys, thank you very much for joining us this evening.
It's been brilliant, guys.
It's been awesome.
Long time coming as well.
Really enjoyed it. Thanks for having us.
Yes. Where can people find you online, etc.? David, do you want to go first?
I've got a website that I kind of like just can't be asked to do anything with, and so if you go on, I can't even remember the, I think it might be sort of davidmbarnett.com, but or I might have let that slip, I don't know, but anyway, you're probably better just finding me on Twitter at davidmbarnett. After 9 it gets a bit sort of stupid and grumpy, but you know, it's
what, 9 a.m.
After 9 a.m. Yeah, when I've had my first drink. But yeah, you better find me on Twitter, and contactable there. And that's where I kind of like hang out when I'm supposed to be working.
And Martin, obviously you're working all the time, but where can people find you? Is he there?
I think it's past his bedtime, actually.
Again, don't look at my website. There's no point in years. If you go to Twitter at Martin_, that's kind of where I stay.
Is he breaking up for anyone else?
It's Martin_Simmons at Twitter. That's where he is. So.
And just a quick one, Dave, you've got a signing coming up. Are you doing the Incredible Comic Shop? Is that right?
Yeah, you cut out, Martin. Yeah. Can you hear us?
Oh, did I? Okay. A little bit. Yeah, you're cutting out a little bit. You sound like Norman Collier.
He was so good. God, yeah, very good.
Hang on, I've got to write that into the next script. One second.
And Dave, you've got David Martin. You've got a signing coming up at a comic shop. That's right, is it? Or
have we, Martin? Have we, Martin? I don't know. What have you organised? he's gone quiet now, hasn't he?
I have. I'm a comic. Yeah.
He's well.
Oh, he's gone.
Yeah.
He's gone completely Jack Douglas now.
Yeah. We'll put it in the show notes, but as I understand it, isn't it coming up at the Incredible Comic Shop in Swindon? I think you've got a sign.
I think Martin's at that one. Yeah,
right, okay.
That's too far south for me, definitely. So.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
But I think we did some stuff in London back end of this month, yet to be confirmed.
Yeah. Oh, okay, cool. Oh, let us know. Yeah, definitely.
There will be links in all the show notes for where to find these guys and the work. And once again, thank you very much for joining us, fellas. It's been awesome.
Thank you, Martin, for having us.
Yes, and David's saying it for both of them. Cause...
Yes.
Martin can still hear us. Gone. But they're all waving goodbye anyway.
Am I still cutting out?
Oh, no. Yes. Do you want to say bye, Martin? Yeah. Do you want to say bye?
Bye.
He said they're like Tweaky from Buck Rogers then.
Oh.
And Martin's gone to the sunken place. I'm sorry.
So there you go. Wasn't that brilliant?
That was good. Yeah, that's a fucking great book. Buy that book if you don't have it already. It's
fantastic.
Love it.
Yeah. I read it through its entirety today, and I really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
And it's a book. There's a lot to it, and it's beautiful. But you can read it like that. It flows between issues so well as well. You know.
I mean, for me, what gets me is like the sense of humor in it. It's just top notch. It's so great stuff. Punk's Not Dead. We're fans. We will continue to be fans. And like we said, there in the future, you might hear more from them. We'll have them back.
Go down the line. Yeah.
Yeah. So there you go. So, and obviously sometimes we have technical issues, but you know, we already
went all right till then.
Yeah, we got what we needed from Martin. Yeah. You know.
And all we got just at the end was see ya.
No, in all honesty, though, if you're not following Martin on Instagram or Twitter or whatever, amend that because, he's not here now, so I'm not talking to him, so I can say this. I think he's probably my favourite cover artist at the moment.
Yeah, he's great, isn't he? Yeah. Yeah, I'll buy anything he's done. I'll buy anything he's done just for the covers. Yeah, definitely.
There you go. There's a pull quote. Something to shout about. Oh, what's that? Shouting? Do we have any shout outs?
Fucking hell.
Oh, sorry. He's gone full part.
Sorry. I'll finish off my squash, and I think all those E numbers have gone in my head.
It's all the chemicals off those enamel badges you bought today.
I don't go around huffing enamel badges. I do sniff. I do like to huff like a book, though.
I'll grind them up and snort them.
Anyway, shout outs.
Okay, so just announced on Twitter yesterday, as you listen to it, is Leamington have announced their new date, and it's going to be the 5th of October next year.
Nice.
They've got some... I've had a bit of a behind-the-scenes sniff at a couple of the guests, and they're going large this year, I've got to tell you. They've got a couple of big guests lined up, so it's looking like it's going to be a good event. So keep your eyes out for that. So they're switching towards the end of the year, which is, well, I think, where they used to be. Is that right?
I think so, yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, I think so. I can't remember. Other than that, The Devil in Disguise trade is out, which is I know you talked about it, Dan. I've talked about it before as well, from Mr. Garvey. Trades are now available. Go to his website. If you actually get the added bonus of me taking the piss out of him in the intro as well, because I wrote the intro to it. Pretty cool. Me and Mr. Butcher are in Fanzine issue 2. Very excited, which I just saw the sort of preview copy of, which celebrates. You remember we had Dave on, didn't we? David Hathaway Price.
Yes.
So I'm going to say it's about a year ago now, maybe.
Time flies, doesn't it? I don't know where this year's gone. It's amazing.
And we talked about the first fanzines in Britain, which was 50 years in. And this is a celebration of 50 years of the first UK comic conventions. And there's you'll love this, Dan, because I know you and I were both at these, but they do a rundown of all the UCACs. And they show the brochures and photographs of the scenes and all this, you know, Dave Gibbons looking about 22 years old and all this sort of thing. It's really, really cracking.
I remember the one I went to had a Punisher Wolverine cover.
Yes, it's in there. That's in there.
Ah, there you go.
Yeah, that's
what I'm sitting on the rooftop.
That's it. That's
weird. We were both at that one.
Yeah, we saw Stan there, didn't we? That was Stan. I think I shook hands with him outside the hall as he walked past me. But that's good. But you and I, you've done the illustration for a little comedy fake email thing I've done. So look out for that, which is kind of fun, which harks back to what Dave was talking about a minute ago about fake conventions. And the final one I've got is coming at Nottingham. Not only have we got issue 3 of our marvellous comic, also I'm doing a little zine with Matt Harrower. We've done a sort of just a fun little thing about the 1990s. And we've done a short strip inspired by a conversation we had on this very show about a year and a half ago. It's only £1. It's going to launch at Nottingham on the 20th. If you can't get to Nottingham to get a physical copy, then you can get a digital copy for 50p. How's that?
Yeah.
So if you have a look at neveronanything.blogspot.co.uk, you'll find all the details there, and there's a couple of images from it, which is just a bit of fun, me and him had. Like, good laugh. There you go.
Nice. That's all I've got. There you go. Do you have any, Dan?
No shout-outs this week, no.
No, I don't either. Well, apart from like...
I was going to make a joke, but I thought better of it because alienate the rest of our listeners, so I won't do that.
Just a little minor shout. Obviously, like Bristol Comic and Zine Fair, I missed Tom Curry there. Shame on you, Tom. I thought I was going to meet you there. Bumped into Alex from Pipe Dream. That was nice. And obviously Tom Oliver and the guys from Avery Hill. So, yeah. And anyone else that went there, I'm not surprised that I missed you because it was so busy. So that's what we want to see at conventions, isn't it? And all these ones that we're going to be at, especially when we've got our comic, because we just want to try and sell as many as we can.
Yeah.
But Awesome Comics 3, big shout out to Rich and the Comic Printing UK guys, because they got the box of printed books this week and they look lovely.
And Ed's cover looks fucking brilliant, doesn't it?
Yes.
Really pleased how that's come out.
Indeed it does. Yeah, and it's going to be... Already, it's going to be one hell of a set when the books are all done and dusted. Mm. So, yeah.
And if you want a copy of the original first two issues,
check them out.
Can currently go to awesomecomicpod.bigcartel.com.
Yes.
And it's how much for digital? £1, isn't it?
It's a quid for digital, yeah. £3 for the printed.
How good is that?
Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you to everyone who's bought an issue so far. Hopefully, our stories are such that if you buy one issue, then you'll be in. The whole lot, so yeah.
Cool.
Which I think we game return customers quite well. So.
We definitely are. Yeah.
Yeah, the third issue that kind of really sets up the cliffhanger of the fourth.
Yeah.
So the third issue is a real good one to get.
Yeah, it's an important one. Oh, speaking of Cliff Cumber, Jesus Christ,
that's
Jesus. He did a piece of fan art for Murder Road, which is now my phone screen wallpaper. Yeah.
Well, it's good about it. I think I woke up to it because he's in a different time zone.
Yeah.
And turned it on. Yeah. I said, oh, fucking, that's great.
What, is he in the future?
Yeah.
I think he's in the Americas.
Right, okay.
I always thought he's from the future. You know?
Yeah.
I thought it was like Back to the Future.
He doesn't
part
need
two.
Roads there, does he?
No.
Yeah.
Is it all hoverboards? Come on, you'd love to use a hoverboard, wouldn't you?
No, you know, you get those twats fucking going down the road of commuting, they're on fucking trikes. You just get people doing that.
Oh,
and you'd
no,
still,
I tell you what,
you still consider
me.
Them twats.
Have you seen those people that are just on like those sort of unicycle type things? Those motorized unicycles?
Yeah, we get them in London all the time. Yeah. They're cool, aren't they?
No. There's one guy, and every time I really have to fight the urge to clothesline him off.
Yeah.
Every time he gets past. Maybe I shouldn't have said that on air. Anyway, but.
As long as you don't do it, you're all right.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, yeah. I'm a violent pacifist. I think about violent things, but I never do them because I don't have the guts.
If there's no implication to doing it, would you do it? If you weren't going to get arrested?
Oh, well, that's a big moral question, that is. That's like something from The Good Place.
Fucking hell, The Good Place. Jesus Christ. Well, I like it, but it's philosophy for idiots, isn't it? Do you know what I mean? The world of philosophy is slightly more complicated than that program.
Yeah, yeah, it is. And we're never going to talk about philosophy on this show. So, but what we do talk about is comics. So let's...
Go on, you go first. You got two, haven't you?
Oh, well, blimey. People have heard a lot of me talking this week. Dan, you can go first.
Okay. I'm going to talk about Resurrection Men, issue 2.
Oh, yes.
Oh, nice. Good.
By friends of the show, NS Paul and Rory Donald, aka Reach Illustration.
He's a geezer, isn't he?
Yeah, he's such a dude. Real positive, upbeat creator.
He also wears our t-shirt whenever he goes to conventions. So yeah. I think he might want commission for advertising.
I think you should get danger money for wearing those t-shirts. So yeah, Resurrection Man issue 2 is currently on Kickstarter. We would kind of send a preview copy to check through. And I think I reviewed it on issue 1 on a previous show, I believe. I could be wrong.
Yeah, you did. Yeah.
Okay. So here's the blurb. What if you could raise the dead? Who would you bring back? What would you do with that power? Resurrection Men 2 tells the story of power, manipulation, mystery, and horror. It's the story of fathers and sons and the lengths people will go to control others. Issue 2, unsurprisingly, continues the story from the first one of James. James is now under the control of Kamel's Resurrection Industries and tries desperately to return his son to the safety with the help of a ghost of his dead wife Ada. All this is it all in James's head, and what's going on under the RIP building? So yes, it's a great comic. It follows straight on from the first one. I believe as part of like one of the packages, you can get the previous issues as like a digital or as a pack as 1 and 2. One of the great things as well, there's like an offer, I've not seen this before on a Kickstarter, where you pledge a certain amount and you get like a whole host of other comics from other creators as kind of like a package deal, and it's not really that much. So I think that's a really great idea for kind of like spreading the word of smaller press comics to other creators. You kind of put in one job lot and a load of people get them. So yeah, it's really nice. It's a fantastic comic. I think it's a four-parter, so I'm really interested to see where the story goes. And one, this is a bit of nepotism, I just realised. I've done one of the pin-ups for the Kickstarter. That's not the reason I'm talking about it, but yeah, it's a fantastic comic. Yeah, definitely check it out.
But you wouldn't do it if you didn't like the series, would you?
That's exactly, yeah. It's got echoes of BPRD and sort of gothic horror. It's nice. They've done a good pair of them.
It's a great series. Great series.
And it's edited by Dan Hill. I feel like we should have a conversation at some point about editing, because a good editor can really uplift the project. Yeah. And I don't know how much input Dan Hill has had in this, but he seems quite the prolific chap.
Yeah.
And,
Yeah, we'll do a future show about editing then. You're right there,
Tony. We'll have to get...
Were you
choking? Sorry, something went down the wrong way. Sorry,
were you choking on your Ginsters?
I'm better now. That's all right. I've started drinking like herbal tea, and it's got to the bottom of the cup, and it's quite sort of strong, and it's lemon and ginger. I think it's made me sterile.
That's why I don't drink herbal teas.
Fucking cannibals, I drink in hay. It's disgusting.
What, sorry?
Like chamomile tea. I'd just rather not fucking drink anything. It's disgusting.
Oh.
I'm just
that's my feelings on that.
Yeah, there you go. Just English breakfast all the way. So we
oh yeah,
lovely milk and one. Anyway,
creamy coffee.
Hey, steady yourself. Yeah. So obviously, I've got a couple of quick shout outs. Obviously, that one of them that I have to mention is Werewolf Social Club by Lucy Ebrie. That I picked up at Bristol Comic Zine. This is a zine about where girls go during the full moon. It's essentially like an art book sort of thing. And Lucy's obviously a massive fan of werewolves, so that's already a massive thumbs up. And this is just lots of different black and white illustrations of like different sort of female werewolf characters. And they're all... What I love about stuff like this is top-notch stuff, but each one has their own individual character. And yeah, sometimes it seems like they're from a different artist, but I don't know, there's something that just brings it all back together. Beautiful black and white stuff. There's definitely, it's an art book that I'm going to treasure, and I'm going to keep an eye out for more work by Lucy, because that was brilliant. And also, as I said earlier, got a brilliant t-shirt from her, so there you go. But the one I'm going to
iron.
Yeah, all right, don't get me started on that. The one I'm going to share this week is the final piece of my Todd Oliver puzzle, which is the book Not Your Cup of Tea. Have you read this?
I haven't read this yet. No, I didn't. Was it new out today or this weekend, was it?
It was printed in September 2018, so I'm not sure if he had it at Thought Bubble.
I didn't get to his table at Thought Bubble, unfortunately.
Yeah, it might have been
for
Thought Bubble. So it's like a... It's like a square sort of, I'm not sure how many pages is it, full colour. It's almost like a boxes, the outtakes, as it were. Cover has a man sitting in a large cup of tea picking his nose. And it says, Not Your Cup of Tea, a collection of comics you probably won't like. This could be some of the stuff that he, and he'll probably correct me anyway, but... I don't know whether he's done it specifically for this or whether it was the webcomic stuff that he's collected. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I get you.
But either way, these are sort of all one-page, fresh, original sketches. That's the best way to put it, because when I look at Todd's work, there's that real sort of sketch show kind of vibe to it. And it's this is very much like a sort of fast show. And they're weird, they're surreal. He probably thinks that people won't necessarily get them or like them because they're... You know, they're dark and certainly surreal. Is it? I mean, I've said it twice, but that's the way I have to think about it. But it just makes me laugh out loud whenever I read Todd's comics. It's like there's one about a rock that is called Murder Rock, which is basically just a stone that's been trained by an ancient Asian sort of kung fu master. And it says, "Murder Rock, the time has come. You are ready for your first assignment. Remember, one quick hard blow to the temple will finish him instantly. Now go." And then this guy literally just throws the rock and it hits someone on the head, but it doesn't kill him straight away.
And this are you getting the powers of ACP lawyers onto him? Around that, because it's literally two letters away from your story.
Well, almost. It's not, Tony, because mine's Murder House.
I almost said that. I'm not going there, you fucker. Yeah, you don't. Yeah.
Murder House.
Yeah, but with this story, there's this guy's like, oh, what? You know, this guy gets cracked in the head. And he's like, oh, who the hell threw that? And then he puts it to one side, and then 40 years later, he dies. He passed away suddenly from a long-term undiagnosed brain injury, to which Murderock is sat with his master again, who says, "An ingenious backup plan, my young apprentice. Your ability to improvise under extreme pressure is impressive." And there's just loads of like these weird sort of jokes like that that I absolutely love. Some of them are dreamlike. Others are just people with like small faces and giant heads.
I'm a fan of Todd because when you meet him, he actually seems normal.
Yes, I know. But the thing is, how can you not read his work and laugh and not laugh? You know, you got to laugh. Yeah. Like there's a child that just goes up to his dad. "Daddy, I drew you a picture. You did. Let's take a look." And of course, it's one of those child drawings that obviously looks awful. And he says, "It's meant to be you, but I know it's not very good." And the dad says, "Nonsense. It looks just like me. See?" And the dad's face looks creepily like the picture. He's morphed into the picture, and it's nightmarish. Absolutely nightmarish.
Autobiographical, this.
Some of it could be. I mean,
he's clearly eaten human flesh, hasn't he?
Clearly.
Said that about him.
I mean, there's one person's trousers that fall down, and someone laughs at him. And he says, "Don't laugh. Gravity is no good, I tell you. It gets everyone in the end." And then the person who's laughing, their face falls off because of gravity. So there you go. And I think one thing I think is quite nice, there's a picture of Todd in the back with his like Twitter and Instagram, etc. And you can find all his work at boxescomic.com. And he's drawn himself, but I'm pretty sure that his children have like drawn pictures of themselves like holding his hand, and he's sort of put it into the picture, which is just really sweet. I mean, after some of the nightmarish visions in the book, it's just wonderful. Yeah, I love Todd's work. Nice. So yeah, not your cup of tea. Obviously we've talked about Smedley and Boxes. Like I say, this might be a collection of stuff that he didn't necessarily deem.
I like all that sort of thing though. That's always worth doing.
It's got that. I can imagine something like that just being an epic, you know, he's destined for some epic coffee table book, isn't he? You know, just full of like just sketches and jokes and things like that. You know, I'd love a real sort of thick hardback book of Todd's work one day in the future.
You can keep that on the coffee table at, you know, a high security prison where, you know, that sort of type place.
What, where you think he'll be?
Maybe a coffee table book for Broadmoor. That's how I would describe his work. And that's why I like it so much. Yeah.
I mean, Todd is essentially, you meet him and you realise he's just Cyrus the Virus from Con Air.
He's nothing like that.
No, he's not.
He's not the nicest guy.
He's the nicest guy ever. So cool. There you go. That's my recommendation for this week. What's yours, Tony? Go on.
I've got one quick one, which is Our Final Halloween. Now, I got to see an early look at Mike Lee Graham and Sheriff Stocky's book, which is really good. And it comes out digitally on Halloween, I think.
Yeah.
So keep an eye out for that. And go and back it on Kickstarter. I think it's almost there, so it's well worth looking at. The art is amazing. I put in the review that I think he must have gone to the shop to get more red about 1,500 times. Because it's absolutely fucking covered in blood, and rightly so, because it fits the story. Very good, very, very, very good. The other one I bought off Comixology, there's an indie comics horror sale on there. Have you seen this?
Oh, no. No, tell me more.
Yes, I think it's just started. It maybe just started last week or something because of Halloween. Because Halloween's like a month thing in America now, isn't it?
Yeah.
They celebrate it for the whole month. Yeah. And I actually bought this because of the title. Do you ever buy anything because you think our title sounds cool? And it's called
Yeah, well, we do occasionally, don't we? It's called A Girl Walks Home Alone at Night. And I thought that sounds like an interesting... So it's the premise in the title, isn't it, essentially, which is what I thought it would be.
Yeah, go on.
Have you read this?
I haven't read it.
Yeah.
But
no?
There's a film called that, which is about a vampire...
Is there?
...in Israel or something like that.
Fucking hell, I didn't even know that. All right, where do I find that?
Don't know, but it's that's definitely a critically acclaimed independent film as well.
Right, now so, I need to see that because I've enjoyed this. So it's a comic, it's written by Anna Lily Amirpour, art by Michael DeWeese, lettering Patrick Brosso, edited by John and Ben Conrad. It's black and white, it's 29 pages, more black than white because it's all happening at night, sort of real sort of black soaked pages, published by a company called Radco. 69p on Comixology in their horror sale. It was Comixology Submit, so they've done well to have a movie of it as well, which is good. Here's the summary. Death is the answer. Strange things are afoot in Bad City, the Iranian ghost town, home to prostitutes, junkies, perps, and other sordid characters. A girl who is also a vampire stalks the city at night, so that is clearly the thing. That's got to be it. Have you seen the movie, have you?
I have not seen the movie. It's been on the watch list. Well, I've wanted to watch for a while, but...
So it's a very, very quick read. You will tear through the first two issues. It's done with a sort of poetry narration thing going on, which is really quite a beautiful juxtaposition to the images you see. And it's one of those stories that begins where it ends. So it's sort of, it starts with her laying in a bath and the water looks dark. And you think, oh, is that just the way the light's playing on it? And she sort of submerged down to the level of her nose. You know what I mean? You know, you get these images of people coming out of the water and you get that occasionally, don't you? It's that sort of standard cover thing, isn't it? She's surrounded by stuff and you later find out what it is. But what you realise is that she is a sort of girl who's a vampire. But she's also like a vigilante who stalks the city at night and she stops this trans person getting a kick in off this sort of yob, and she drinks the blood of those that deserve it. It's like that sort of story, if that makes sense, but it's quite minimal in style. There's very few panels per page. The art's like really clean, absolutely like spot on, Love and Rockets clean edged kind of style to it, but a real sort of pro level. She climbs the roofs and fences and buildings but she's got this sort of psychic power where she can sense the motives of the people around her. And she acts with a sort of combination of kindness, but like this sort of sudden sort of vampire violence. It's a little bit sort of gory to a certain extent. The words are sort of limited. The actions are speak more to the story than anything is really said. As you get to the end of issue one, you realise that what she's lying in is a bath of blood. She's bathing in blood. But off everyone she kills, she steals jewellery. And next to the bath is a little pile of rings and bracelets and stuff that she's stolen from people. Who'd ever thought I'd be reading an Iranian vampire vigilante story?
Yeah. You know
what I mean?
Yeah.
It's not the most common of genres. But it's actually really good. The second story is more of a sort of... It's a little bit of a out-in-the-desert origin thing. Which I'll let you have a look at yourself. The company's based, I looked them up, they're based in Venice, California, and they're radco.tv. They've got a couple of issues out of other things, which are all in this Comixology Submit Horror sort of sale thing that's going on. But to be honest with you, I was just sort of drawn in by the title. I thought, and it's sort of this lonely figure walking down a street in the first cover. And I thought, well, that looks interesting. And it's only 69p, so I just took a punt on it and sort of tore through it this morning. Really enjoyed it. So I shall most certainly be looking that movie out. I've got to.
Who wrote and did the art?
It's written by Anna Lily Amirpour.
She's the director of the film. She wrote and directed the film.
Yeah. Oh, nice. So maybe this is an adaptation of the film then.
It might be, which is interesting.
You just sent me the poster, didn't you?
Yeah.
Cool. Is it a foreign language movie, is it?
I think it may be.
An art by Michael DeWeese, who sounds like probably been employed by this company in California as a sort of guest, I would say. Sounds like an American kind of name, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I've not heard of that one. Is that relatively new, Vince?
2014. Doing the independent circuit. It's a black and white movie. I heard a lot of...
Oh, nice.
Yeah, a lot of critically acclaimed.
Well, that just perfectly suits this comic. If, yeah. I don't know what came first. I'm guessing the movie came first. From the date that the comic came out, I think that sounds about right.
Yeah.
So it's maybe some form of adaption or spin-off or origin story or something like that. But
well,
I can see
certainly it be interesting really to see like what your experience is going from the comic to the film.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll try and find that on a streaming service or something. Yeah. I love black and white movies. I'm a big fan, especially modern made black and white movies. I'm a big fan of that sort of atmosphere that they build with them, you know.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. Oh, nice. Yeah. I'm going to look for that. Yeah. Oh, there you go. So that's my one. Yeah. Yeah. Just a little surprise. I thought I just wanted to try something completely different. Yeah. So I just basically chose a random 69p comic. Yeah. And it turned out right.
Yeah. That's what you got to do sometimes, and you find some gems. Absolute gems.
Yeah.
And we hope you enjoyed this show, which was full of absolute gems, which is David and Martin, obviously, and us.
Yeah. Us mostly.
Yeah. But don't blame them for that. But we hope you enjoyed the rest of the show. And obviously, if you want to get in touch with us about anything that you heard on the show, you can email us awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. We haven't got any competitions and stuff at the moment, have we?
No, we haven't.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll have to do something cheeky for maybe a future convention or whatever.
Yeah, for the release. We'll do something for the release issue 3, shall we?
Yeah, yeah. So stay tuned next week. See what we cook up. Follow us on Twitter @TheAwesomePod, where we'll probably announce some interesting polls, announce guests. We've got some cracking guests coming up over the next few weeks, as always. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/awesomecomicspodcast. If you do group chat on Facebook, then go to Awesome Comics Talk, because there's loads of people talking about making comics, conventions, just comic topics in general. It's great stuff. I think all the people that take part in that just really enjoy it. They just
Some really interesting points made this week, actually.
Yeah,
a couple of people having a bit of trouble with sort of getting going creatively, you know, and all this sort of thing. Yeah, interesting stuff.
Yeah,
definitely.
Yeah, so definitely check out Awesome Comics Talk. Thank you for listening to us, whether it's on the website, awesomecomics.podbean.com. If you heard us on iTunes, subscribe, leave a review, helps get the word out. And, you know, the more people listen to the show, the more people discover these great indie books that we talk about. And if you listen to us on Spotify, cheers. Spotify numbers are going up, which is quite nice.
Yeah,
it's quite nice. And it also, if you listen to us on any of the networks, like Stitcher, Podnose, Podknife, what other networks are we on, Tony?
Podfishkin.
Right, if you want to know what that is, I want to put a warning in. We're going to do a dictionary corner, Dan's dictionary corner, after the credits. But I will put
it's
a warning
a related
now.
Subject.
It's sickening.
Yeah,
it is.
I thought it sounded quite good.
It's when you hear it after the credits, if you stick around for that,
don't judge me.
You can judge Tony based on that. But you know, you have been warned. So there you go.
But if you are in charge of me at work, then please don't listen after the credits.
Yeah, don't. But do follow us on Twitter, etc. Where can people find us, Tony?
Ezohyz. Never on anything.blogspot.co.uk. And also sign up to tinyletter.com/cockneykungfu. We got a bit of a rush of people signing up because we talked about what you do when you read a comic and how you sort of access it yourself. And this week we've got another little bit of a thing that I've put out as discussion. I'd be really interested for people to hear what they think about it. It's something I've worked on this week. I hope people sign up and read it. There you go.
Nice. What about you, Dan?
You can find me on Twitter @VanguardComic, and you can read Vanguard at VanguardComic.com. There
nice.
You go.
What's your Patreon?
I think it's patreon.com/vanguardcomic.
Because obviously, if people sign up to that, they can get early glimpses of your work, can't they?
And an STD. They can get an STD this week.
Yeah, I've got a super STD picture on there today.
Lovely.
I got my account flagged as adult content, and I had to take that down and email and said, "Look, it's not adult content. I don't want adult content on my Patreon."
I thought that was all you ever wanted, Dan. But you know,
all over your Patreon.
Did you?
I mean, like, people getting their faces smashed in and stuff like that is fine, but
that's fine.
Any sort of hint of sexuality is like,
oh,
no,
don't want that filth. Anyway, you can follow me on Twitter @JesterDiablo. You can find out more about my comic@theredmouseforMars.com. Thank you once again, as always, folks, for listening. Another cracker one. Thank you to Martin and Dan for...
Yeah, they were good guests, actually. It's been about 10 minutes Martin came on. How long have we been asking
him
for?
Months.
Literally 3 years.
Yeah. Yeah.
Good.
But we get them eventually.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is actually sounds really creepy now.
Yeah, Mark Miller, we're coming for you still. Don't worry.
He doesn't listen. Miller Watch died on its own. Anyway, from Dan, Tony, and myself, have a brilliant week, and I'm terrified of what's about to happen next. But you people can, as always, stay awesome. See ya.
See ya.
Okay, are you sitting comfortably? You better be, because it's time to
lay science on you.
We're going to lay scientific knowledge on you, and it's the return of Dan's Dictionary Corner.
Brilliant.
We're here, myself and Tony are joined by the esteemed PhD, Dr. Daniel Butcher, who's here
Professor of Language.
Language and love, and he's about to drop some knowledge on us. Now, what are you going to teach us about this week, Dan?
What's this week, Dan?
Well, this week in the Dictionary Corner is clamkin. It's a female version of a blumpkin. When a woman is sitting on the toilet defecating, the sexual partner is administering oral sex. It comes in three varieties, the first being the regular old clamkin as described above. The second is a Manhattan clamkin, red sauce, also known as the Red Sea Beach Blanket Bingo, the clamkin during the women's period days of the month. The third type is the New England clamkin, white sauce,
interesting,
or the brown snowball. It takes place after the male counterpart.
It's still going.
Shoots his semen on the vagina. Then engages in the oral. Clamkins in the past have been known as brunette goatee or the brown soul patch due to the residual fecal product on the chin of the partner giving the oral sex. Yes, so there we go.
Dictionary Corner. Thank you, Professor Butcher, for that interesting insight. I put it around my mouth.
Anyway, there we go. Jeez. More next week, folks.
Oh, that's something to look forward to.
Very educational.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah, so watch yourself next week, folks.